Welcome to the M&A Unplugged podcast. Our mission is to help you be better prepared for your business acquisition or sale. Being prepared will ensure you maximize returns and minimize risks. Every week, we will deliver you actionable content about the process of buying and selling a business. This is M&A Unplugged with your host, Dominic Rinaldi.
Welcome back to M&A Unplugged. I'm your host, Dominic Rinaldi. Integration of employees is such a critical aspect of any M&A transaction. Yet, most entrepreneurs spend too little time planning for and executing this element. And the planning for this phase should actually start the moment you decide you're going to pursue an acquisition, not when you're already in due diligence. My guest today, Jennifer Fondreve, is an expert in the human capital aspect of M&A transactions. She has personally been part of several large M&A transactions and seen firsthand how the human capital piece can sour an entire deal. From that experience, Jennifer authored the book, Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Mergers and Acquisitions, which eventually led to her starting her own consulting practice to help executives and acquirers stick the landing when it comes to the people part of a transaction. Jennifer shares key insights on the most overlooked aspects of integrating people, best practices for handling human capital, and how COVID has changed the landscape and the challenges it presents in truly analyzing this part of any deal. Jennifer is engaging and forthright in her advice, which comes from firsthand experience. I know you can learn a ton from this critical piece of the M&A process. But before we get to today's episode, if you want to avoid the common deal pitfalls and the risk of losing substantial dollars, you need to know how ready you really are to buy a business. Because I believe proper preparation is so critical to your deal success, we have published a catalog of free resources to help you be better prepared. You can access these resources on our website at k2advisor.com. K, the number 2, advisor.com. Being prepared is critical to ensuring that you maximize returns and minimize risks. Thank you for being here and hope you enjoy today's episode. Jennifer, welcome to M&A Unplugged. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So as I mentioned to everybody in my intro, you run a business that specializes in advising owners and C-suite executives on how to prepare the human capital for the challenges of an M&A transaction. It's not an obvious career path, right? I mean, you have niched down, you're an expert in this area. How did you get there?
Yeah, you can say it. What the hell are you doing? Why did you choose this path? I was a marketing executive. So 25 years in advertising and marketing and did very well. I reached, you know, chief marketing officer status. But in that capacity, I went through three separate multi-billion dollar acquisitions. Probably the most well-known one that your listeners might know is when Nokia acquired Navtech. Navtech was navigation technologies, digital mapping. So I won't bore you with the details of that, but if you followed Nokia at all, that acquisition didn't play out as expected. And what frustrated me is I thought the opportunity was tremendous. I thought Nokia was very smart in acquiring us, recognizing that people wouldn't just connect over the phone, that they would connect through mapping and location-based solutions. But because our cultures, Navtech was very B2B, Nokia was B2C, let's just say the integration was not as successful as it could have been. And then in two subsequent M&A deals, I saw the same types of challenges around integration. And I felt by the third one, okay, there's got to be a better way to do M&A. And I wasn't finding books or guidance as an executive. And I thought, okay, I'm going to write a book. But all I planned to do, Dominic, at the time was just write a book. I was still interviewing to become a CMO. That was my plan. But I had enough CEOs in private equity who I interviewed for the book say, well, what are you doing besides the book? This is important information. Companies would benefit from this guidance. To which usually my cheeky reply was, well, do you know how hard it is to write a book? I was just happy to be writing a book. But it was, they were right. You know, the book wasn't going to get into people's hands if, you know, even with publishing the way it is, I knew that I had to do more around it. So I say I became an accidental entrepreneur, but it's been enormously rewarding because executives, as you said, it's very niche, but executives typically don't have guidance. I play the role of M&A whisperer, if you will. I think that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. I often say to my clients, there is no more important asset in a transaction than the people. Right. I personally think it's more important than the clients. It's more important than the underlying technology. The people are what makes it all work. They're the glue that makes it all come together. And unfortunately, so often what I've seen is the people part of it is left to the last part of diligence and maybe even left until after the deal closes, and then everybody's scrambling to figure out, okay, now what do we do with the people? You know, they figured out the payroll and all that, but that's really not what it's all about, right? Payroll's easy, right? It's soft issues around what do you do with your human resources?
And that Dominic, is really what motivated me to write the book and to do the work that I do, because I get it. I was an executive. I had the retention package, you know, I benefited from having some insight in those deals, but because the people piece hadn't been talked about earlier, you know, if you don't start talking about or thinking about, okay, how are we going to address the people piece until later, then what happens is you can lose major talent, your productivity can drop off a cliff, and the valuation that you set for a significant milestone in year one, you don't reach it because you've lost a lot of time and you've potentially lost the people who were going to contribute to that vision. Yeah. And I felt that it's why I call my company Day One Ready. For me, day one's, you know, not the day you announce that you start. Day one is the moment you start to contemplate a merger and acquisition for your company. Yeah. How do you need to think about it? And the reason why I joke that I'm an M&A whisperer is you'll often talk to a lawyer, an accountant, maybe a buddy who's gone through an M&A to get some insight and perspective. And I say you equally need to talk to a human capital advisor. Doesn't have to be me, but you have to talk to someone who will give you that perspective.
Absolutely.
And I've seen the benefits of those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get to some of the top pitfalls that people fall into, what they miss, you know, what are the top 3 to 5, but I want to make a distinction here. So you've been involved in a lot of public transactions. I know now as a consultant, private ones as well. And when it's public, those get announced well in advance of the deals actually closing, right? So you've got the human resources, the people who they've got a big head start in understanding that the companies are going to merge and maybe they start looking for jobs. In private transactions, though, usually people don't, the employees don't know that it's coming. It usually, their notification usually comes the day it closes, which creates a whole different set of challenges. And I want to make sure that for the audience, we are making that distinction because just because employees don't know it's coming doesn't mean that there are, you know, in fact, there might even be more pitfalls because they didn't know that it was happening. So if you want to make a comment about that, please. And then if not, I'd like to move into the top pitfalls that people make when they're merging.
No, I'd love to talk about this topic. In fact, and I think we talked about this a while ago, I wrote my HBR article was about that very thing, right? When you have a company where the employees feel blindsided, right? Mm-hmm. And the whole article was about how do you avoid us versus them thinking once the deal is done? Because what I saw happen, and it actually happens, there's a lot of similarities, whether it's a multi-billion or a mid to small business, same type of symptoms emerge. So you have our company versus their company, executives versus frontline leaders, and who stays versus who goes. those are the three different dynamics that can negatively impact the success of the deal. And no one thinks about that. Or I should say, to the point you made, it's not that they don't think about it. They just delay thinking about it because their focus is on the transaction.
Yes.
Most people expect the our company versus their company. So they're when there is planning, it's about, hey, let's make sure we do things to help. You know, there is usually some thought, but where I see the most, frankly, where the failures tend to be driven by is you have executives who've known about the deal for a while, typically, even, you know, smaller or big, but then you have an entire workforce who feels blindsided, who says, well, I've helped build this company too, right? I've contributed, I've worked, now I've got a pivot. I don't understand the strategy. What's our team going to do? What's our role? And you know well, Dominic, that business is based on trust, right? When you have employees who trust one another, you can do great things. And that can all unravel when you've now got a workforce that feels as though they've been blindsided. And it happens with good reason. I get it, right? There's the compliance, the legal issues, the confidentiality, all of that. But this is why I focus so much on helping executives understand how they need to communicate, how quickly they need to communicate, and how they need to engage their frontline leaders as quickly as they can so they can feel part of that crafting of that future vision.
Yeah. All right. And I want to get to what are some of the remedies to the pitfalls. Let me dive a little bit deeper in the pitfalls. So when when a company decides, or an individual, you know, high net worth individuals, investor groups come together and they decide they're going to acquire a firm, what should they be thinking about early on? What questions should they be asking themselves about the people? So that they can start to get the right frame of reference. So as they build the plan for transition, they're building the right plan. So are there things that they need to be asking up front to be better prepared?
Yeah, and it dovetails a bit with what we were just talking about. And it is possible. I find whether it's private equity or a business owner looking to acquire another, as much as they can have line of sight on what the frontline leaders are doing, how they work, you know, whether it's a product, service, or solution, but getting as close as you can to the people who are actually engaged in the work, because where I see often the disconnects are, and I say this as someone who became an executive, as you move up, you don't always appreciate the time, the resources, the budget needed to get certain things done and what a realistic timeline is.
Yeah.
And so as much as you can have clarity around that. So for instance, I was engaged by a PE firm to go in and they, you know, I wasn't presented as someone who was coming in because it was an acquisition, but it was more to interview certain frontline leaders about, you know, what was going well with the company, where were areas of improvement, who did they think the true leaders were that were critical to the success of the company. And having that insight allowed both the president and the potential acquiring company to get very smart on how the work was really getting done. Yeah. And so I say that there, you know, because typically the answer I hear is, well, we can't, right? Everything's confidential. You don't want to talk about it too soon. People will leave. I'm sensitive to that, but I think you can be smart and figure out ways to still get better insight on how the work's getting done.
Yeah, I love that solution to the standard, you can't talk to my employees. There's lots of ways around that. The one you just cited, third parties that can interview clients and ask the clients their satisfaction with the company, and do they get good service? And so there's lots of ways you can really test what's happening without anybody knowing that there's an acquisition going on. And those data points can be really helpful. I mean, even to the point where it could cause, I've heard situations where it's caused buyers to walk away because they figured out there wasn't going to be a cultural fit, or the changes that they were going to have to make were going to be too foundational and they'd risk losing everybody.
Yeah. And I'm so glad to hear you say the same, because I feel like that is just such a automatic answer. Well, we can't talk. You can't have that level of insight. And I think it maybe comes from my marketing background. You know, you do focus groups, and you're asking them questions about one thing, but you're really looking to see how they answer for a completely different reason, right? Right. And it just, it gives you the insight that you need, and it frankly can help have people answer you more frankly and more openly, and that's what you're looking for.
Yes.
Yeah, you want to be as smart as you can going into this.
Look, as an M&A advisor that represents both buyers and sellers, not at the same time, but, you know, in different deals, when we represent a seller, you know, we have to convince them oftentimes that it's okay to have these surveys done. Now, there's a right time and a place for them. We'll always urge that the parties do it after some of the more fundamental diligence is done. Like, we've done financial diligence and we know it looks good. Like, there isn't a non-human reason to terminate the transaction, right? And then if those, all that diligence works out, then you can move to these things, which are sort of like, I don't want to say they're the later pieces, because I just said earlier, you don't want to wait until the last minute, but, you know, they're not the first things you do.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you highlight. I mean, obviously you have to have hit certain milestones before you take those steps. Because there have been instances where I've actually been asked, well, what happens if you get all the way to the end and then you decide not to do it?
Yeah.
And I'll say, you have to be aware that you've now made people aware in your executive leadership and defending how far down you've gone, your other employees.
Yeah.
There are ramifications that come with that. So if you decide not to do the deal, it's, you know, the toothpaste's already out of the tube.
Yeah.
So be prepared for now. You've got employees who are wondering, oh, okay, so our leader was thinking of selling the company or acquiring another. What does that mean about my job?
Yeah, right. Yeah. We're really careful with clients about this. I mean, we've had a couple of situations just in the last 12 months where these surveys have had to happen. The buyer demanded them, but they were done and they were masked as satisfaction surveys or other types of surveys. So thankfully, all of those deals closed. But if one of them hadn't, nobody would have been any wiser that the owner was contemplating a transaction. So there really is a way to do it without anybody becoming alarmed or even, you know, aware that a potential transaction is in the works.
Right.
So Jennifer, let's move to, we talked about pitfalls. We hinted to some of the things you can do to be preventative, but what are some of the remedies that you, or some of the guidance that you give to owners around their human resources and the best practices for integrating cultures and people and taking care of them?
Well, there's a couple of steps that I take, and where I've seen that companies coming together have had the most success. I like to try and do what I call a pre-mortem. So we know the post-mortem, right? The patient dies and you try and figure out what were all the things that went wrong for the that led to that.
Yeah.
In a pre-mortem, in a business context, you act as though you've made the decision, right? You're going to pursue the deal, and you have, and this is to your point, right? You're at, now at a stage where you're pretty much about to finalize the deal, and this is to see alignment. Are we aligned? How are we going to work out? So, you know, I do a pre-mortem with the company separately first. What are all the ways that this could go wrong? Mm. How do you, and it's almost what I like to say is a reverse SWOT, right? You think about your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, and your threats.
Yeah.
What happens if any one of those or several of those happen after this deal is done, right? Yeah. What's the impact on that? And oftentimes, and I will say, it's scenario planning, right? You don't go into battle without having done military drills. You consider every possible scenario that could happen so that you are prepared when the enemy does something that you hadn't expected. It's the same dynamic. And here, that allows, and I will say, I'm an optimist, ideally none of these things will happen.
Yeah.
But if they do, you at least have had some consideration, and because it's your executive team looking at it from an operational, an accounting, a financial, a political frame of reference, it can be invaluable in giving you confidence as you move forward, and also, you know, help you see where you're aligned. Dominic, I'm sure you've had this experience where everyone thinks they're aligned, And then you have a discussion and you realize, wow, we're actually further apart than we thought.
Doesn't that happen in daily life everywhere? Your marriage, your kids, you know, right? Everywhere, right? So why would a business be any different?
I said to my husband, I thought we were on the same page here.
Happens everywhere, right? Why wouldn't it happen with a, you know, living, breathing organism like a company?
Yep. Yeah. And so I find that exercise, which the times that I've done it, inevitably, I will have executives say, I was a little worried about doing this, but this was so helpful.
Yeah.
And when I give them the military scenario, when I say, just think about it in that context, right? You don't just go and say, here's a rifle, you know, here's whatever, good luck. You know, you do drills intentionally to be smart about all the potential scenarios that could happen.
Yeah. And the kid in us always wanted to be in the military if we weren't. And we've got that fascination. And I love that drill. Let's do the pre-mortem. What could go wrong? And what would your response be to it? I think that's a great way to approach the human resources aspect of an M&A transaction. And actually, the whole thing, it's not just human resources, right?
Well, what's bizarre, and I think in a past life, I must have been in the military because I use a lot of military references. Like I talk about frontline leaders, right? If you haven't had the insight from frontline leaders, it would be like going into battle without actually talking to the frontline line and not having that insight. So it's just funny. My husband's like, what's with you in the military references? It informs a lot of how I think we can be smarter in planning around mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, I think it works. You had made a reference earlier to communication. Let's talk a little bit about communication and the role that plays. And let's assume that this is a private transaction. So the public, you know, nobody knows about it. They don't want anybody to know about it. What are the best practices from your perspective around communication, the right timing? Is there some sort of approach that you take to communication with your clients that would be helpful?
So a couple of things. One, absolutely, communication is critical, but there's a cadence to the communication. So two things on the upfront. I say, be prepared to communicate immediately. Like you are sitting down with your entire workforce the moment you announce the deal, right? Already you probably have a certain number of people who are aware, but you're going to talk to everyone right away and you can't wing it.
Yeah.
This is not something where you because you're excited, you can't assume everyone else is excited too. You've been living with this. You've probably lived with it a lot longer because most executives I know, it's been in their brain for a while. Then things start to go into motion. But you are now announcing something where people instantly in that moment where you make that news, they go from thinking about the company to thinking purely about themselves. And I say to executives, this is not to judge. You would do the same. You are now finding out news that impacts your career, your livelihood. So you go. That's why I did an article on the secret language of mergers and acquisitions. The moment you say something, you become like Charlie Brown's teacher. Because people now, all they hear is, oh my God, we're going through an acquisition. Yes. And there's a lot of negative baggage attached to M&A. So people automatically think, what does this mean for my job? What does this mean for my title? Will my team stay together? What is my husband or wife going to say?
Yeah.
And so I always forewarn executives, one, to be prepared not to wing it, and to have crafted a vision for what the deal is intended to do. You need to paint a picture of where you're taking the company and why the two of you coming together helps the company overall be successful, right? So you paint that vision first. And what I say is the more executives can craft that communication with their executive leadership so that everyone's singing from the same songbook.
Yes.
And, you know, the operations person will talk about it one way. The CFO might talk about it another, but you're all singing from the same vision and you're helping interpret that vision for the different teams that report to you. Because where I find oftentimes there's a disconnect, if your vision is so high level that no one understands where you're going And I can say from experience, you know, when I was in the NAFTEC Nokia one, the vision was so high level and it kept getting changed and finessed. And I say this as somebody who was in the marketing communications team constantly trying to help people understand what the vision was. So communication cannot be underplayed.
Yeah.
The other piece of that I say is this is where you go out of your way to solicit questions. You know, oftentimes you might have those town halls where you're just like, ugh, I know that one guy or that one lady is always going to ask me a question. You solicit those. They're speaking for a lot of other people and you want to hear that. And the more you demonstrate an openness to those questions,
yes,
the more people will feel like, okay, well, I'll ask a question too. And really creating an environment for that communication is critical in those first, I would say, first 2 weeks.
Yeah. I think those are fantastic points. If I could add one thing to that, I always caution my clients too, that the first thing they need to tell people is that they have a job and that if their compensation hasn't changed, the compensation hasn't changed. Because I think to your point of Charlie Brown's teacher, they're worried about making the mortgage payment, the, you know, college tuition. People need to know that their security is intact. And then they're willing to listen to everything else, right? And so, and if they don't have a job, those people need to be informed immediately and not let that drag on.
You may have younger listeners, so we should explain Charlie Brown's teacher sounds like wah, 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 wah. Like you couldn't understand Charlie Brown's teacher.
Exactly. Thank you for making that clear. Jennifer, this is tremendous information. Let's talk a little bit about COVID and how COVID...
Because we love talking about COVID.
Yeah, right? I mean, it dominates every conversation these days, but... it's created a different workforce, a different environment, right? Different working environment. We're going to have distributed workforces. You know, the list goes on and on and on. From your perspective, how has COVID changed maybe the approach here or to discovering what's going on or the remedy at the end? You know, how do you make sure that you get to people with some of the challenges that we have now with distributed workforces and all sorts of things?
Well, I'll start first with what I think was a profound lesson that has applications for mergers and acquisition. I think traditionally our model for a leader is, you know, they have a vision and they delegate and they have confidence and they, you know, everyone rallies behind them and you move forward. And what I've said is, take a look at where those leaders who were most successful during the pandemic, how did they get people to change behavior? How did they get people to get to acceptance that they had to change and that they had to pivot? It was those leaders who communicated openly, consistently, transparently. Who role modeled the behavior that they wanted to see, right? They didn't ask for social distancing and for you to wear a mask, but then not to do that themselves. And they also engaged the people closest to the work and they had, you know, they had an empathetic mindset. They acknowledged, you know, there's parts of this I don't know and there's parts of it that we're going to work on together. But by engaging the people in the front lines, who were doing the work and had the visibility, you know, whether it was healthcare workers or scientists, but it was really those leaders, and it was whether it's CEOs or your political leaders, we have a reference point for those leaders who did better, demonstrating a more empathetic mindset and a willingness to really appreciate what other people were going through. The reason why I say that has applications for M&A is you're usually evaluating the management, the executive management on their boldness, their confidence, how they move forward. But you need to equally have leaders in that mix who get the emotional part of you know, what can often be some grief stages, right? When a company is pivoting and changing from what they used to do, you know, you can have a workforce, we've talked about it, if they feel blindsided and this is new news and they're trying to adjust.
Right.
Having an empathetic leader that recognizes that and helps them move on towards acceptance can have an enormously successful impact on how a company or how a workforce can pivot. So that for me, Dominic, was probably the most striking lesson learned, was to have that example. And having talked to a number of executives, they consistently say, you're right, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that we did see that. And they even said, as I opened up more to my employees and I talked to them about what we were facing, the more I felt like we were in this together, and yeah. we didn't have that dynamic before.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a great point for any business acquirers listening out there, that this is something they should be looking for in an acquisition. You know, how did those leaders handle their workforce? That will tell you a lot about how easy it is, it's going to be to transition that business and merge it or take it over. Along with, you know, the hurdles gotten higher on employee diligence, right? It's, even though you can use third-party survey firms and they can do their job, when the workforce is distributed and we're in the midst of all of this and there's been turnover and people not coming back to their jobs because they're making more money on unemployment and you've had to bring in new people, like, acquirers have their work cut out for them in diligence here around figuring out what's the company doing, let alone what's the human capital doing in the business.
You know where I've seen some of the greatest success, and you probably have as well, but when executives and their executive team have called people, have had one-on-one conversations with members of their team. It's fascinating to me that because we're so used to email and doing everything online, that now if you actually get called, holy cow, you actually know who I am. You know, you pay attention to the role that I play in the company.
Right.
And it's fascinating how that has re-engaged a lot of people, because they've had leaders, bosses, who said, you know, either who called or said, let's, you know, we'll have a virtual Zoom chat, but I just want to hear how you are doing, not just in the whole group, but you individually. And so I recognize that, you know, not the size of companies can't always allow for that, but I do think leaders who proactively engage their teams, again, going back to empathetic mindset, but it has people feeling valued.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's such a great point. You know, I was reared in corporate America, and I can remember a time where, as an executive, we were forced through the human resources system to actually sit down on a quarterly basis with our direct reports and do a quarterly update to the annual plan. Now, that wasn't the only time you sat down face to face, but it was formalized. And if you didn't do it, you were getting phone calls. Even as a senior executive. So I think we've really, as a culture, moved away from a lot of that. And I think that's so important. And now it's more important than ever, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you've probably watched as closely as I have how the mental health, you know, I would call that an epidemic. It's just, Yes. Because so many people have had to adjust with variables that were not anticipated.
That's right.
You know, it's interesting. I mentioned before the stages of grief that a company can go through. Yeah. A lot of the recent work that I've done is just to help companies who right now are grieving the future that won't be, right? The company had to pivot significantly. Right. They may have lost some people. They may have a new strategy, and you know, you can get through it. It is, you know, you get to acceptance, but I think the more companies acknowledge the emotional journey that a lot of their employees may be on, you know, acknowledging that is an important step.
Yeah, I think that's great. Well, we covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, but let me give you this opportunity. Is there anything that we didn't touch on or a point that you'd really like to make that you think would be important for the M&A Unplugged audience to know?
You know, what's fascinating, we've covered so much. The benefit that I see, one of the outcomes of the pandemic, and I'm always looking for the upside, is the recognition about the people, right? Yeah. We've gotten very clear on essential workers. And mm-hmm. and I hope that stays. I think the understanding that the people who toil away at a job that maybe you hadn't really thought much about before, seeing how that contributes to the overall success of, you know, not just a company, but a country, a state, a nation. And I'm heartened by that recognition. And I hope that stays, because that's frankly what both you and I have been talking about, right? It's the people, the people piece. So keeping focus on that, will help you be successful in business.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Great point. So you referenced your book earlier, but you didn't mention the name. So I want to give you the opportunity to do that, please. And then if you could leave a way for people to get in touch with you if they wanted to follow up and have a conversation about this topic.
Will do. Thanks for reminding me to highlight the book. So it's a book that I looked for as an executive and I couldn't find. It's called Now What? A Survivor's Guide for Thriving Through Mergers and Acquisitions. I always emphasize very quickly, it's 225 pages. It's a quick read. You could get through it in about 3.5 hours, even if you're not a speed reader, and it's illustrated. So there are parts of the book. One are the stages of grief that I referenced. The other part are the personalities that emerge when fear is an operative emotion in a company. Mm. And so each of those 10 personalities is brought to life via caricature. Mm. And then ultimately the book is how to be smarter as an executive, how to prepare and be a good leader. And then as someone going through it, how to see the opportunity when things are changing. Awesome. And that's, you know, the book was, I feel like I was on a mission when I wrote it, and I'm just thankful that it's had the positive impact that it has.
Awesome. That's great. Great work. And how can people get in touch with you?
So I know you'll provide links in the show notes. So JenniferJFondreve.com is my website. And I always encourage people to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I post a lot there, articles and content, and some of my illustrations. So please do reach out on LinkedIn. You know, I feel, Dominic, that's how you and I got connected. And the more of us that are speaking this same message, I think the greater the benefit will be to business overall.
Absolutely. Jennifer, a pleasure to get to know you, and thanks for being a guest. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you again for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. All of today's information will be available in the show notes. If you enjoy our content, please remember to subscribe and review our podcast. I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of the M&A Unplugged podcast. And until then, please remember that scaling, acquiring, or selling a business takes time, preparation, and the proper knowledge.
Thank you for joining us today on M&A Unplugged. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and recommend it wherever you get your podcasts. If you want more great information on how to scale, acquire, or sell a business, please visit our website at sunacquisitions.com.